in trouble. What a sad, sad story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory.
Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around and then we found the man for you and me.
And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy.
Of course, springtime for Hitler from the Mel Brooks movie The Producers. Is it possible to make fun of Hitler without trivializing the horrors he perpetrated? I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate today. The question of what is an appropriate subject for humor and when is it permissible to laugh at the absurdities of horrible events has been much debated. In his book Dead Funny, Rudolf Herzog traces the jokes and humor in Germany during the rise and fall of Hitler's Third Reich and discusses what those jokes meant in the context of German awareness, dissension, and complicity. The book is published by Melville House and is by Rudolf Herzog. And in case you're wondering, the son of filmmaker Werner Herzog. Rudolf, welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, hi.
And I don't know if you saw South Park in the last week or if you've seen it. I actually rarely watch it, but caught this one. But the kids create a comedy award show, and Germany wins for least funny nation.
Okay.
They have an award, which is not exactly true, because as it turns out, there were Hitler jokes in Germany even during the war, right?
Yes, there were, but that doesn't say very much about the quality. It was a mass phenomenon to joke about Hitler and the system, which doesn't mean that they were necessarily critical jokes. For instance, there were a lot of jokes about Hermann Göring, who was Hitler's second in charge, and who, like most of the others, didn't look Aryan at all. I mean, he was really fat and, you know. And there were lots of jokes about him because he was also very vain. He had all these medals on his chest, and people would say he had them remodeled in rubber so he wouldn't have to take them off in the bathtub, these kind of things. So, you know, it's kind of funny, but then you kind of think this isn't real criticism. That he was a mass murderer is quite a different thing, and that wasn't tackled in the jokes. They only became really bleak and hard and harsh, wishing death to these people during the later phase of the war when it was actually backfiring and coming home to Germany.
So it was actually a little bit of a mix. I mean, I would imagine that they would be mostly jokes making fun of Hitler, but in some cases, were there actually pro-Hitler jokes too?
Yes, there were pro-Hitler jokes. And there was also pro-Hitler comedy. I mean, they'd experimented with trying to indoctrinate people by, for instance, making an anti-Semitic comedy, which is a very vicious and mean way of kind of putting this ideology into people's heads, because you sort of enlight comedy in a subject which is sort of anchored in the 19th century. You know, you go through all these anti-Semitic cliches. You're not expecting it, and you have an emotional response to it rather than, you know, that they would tell you that, you know, argue why the Jews were bad for the German people. Then people would have to treat it intellectually. But if you kind of see a comedy, then you're not expecting that kind of content, and it makes it easier to ostracize these people and ultimately to kill them. So there were experiments like that.
How did you actually come to the idea that there was a body of jokes referring to Hitler's Germany, that there would be a book in this?
My great aunt was a bit of a messy, you know, in the war. She started collecting stuff. She never threw anything away. And when she was very old, she moved to the United States to her daughter. And my uncle had to clear out her house. And it was a huge mess, and they found all sorts of things, including a jam jar from 1940. But they also found a paper. He also found a paper with some anti-Hitler jokes dated 1940 or 41. And at the time, I was really taken aback that there would be such a thing. And I researched it a little, and I found that there are actually collections of jokes which came out directly after the war, and that this was, in fact, a mass phenomenon. Like, everyone was telling these jokes.
And what is the discussion today in Germany as to whether to laugh at the history and the memory of Hitler or not?
It's changed a lot over the last 5 or 6 years. It's become more permissible and more accepted. I think what kick-started it was that cartoons came out in the 90s ridiculing Hitler, where he was sort of this sort of cartoon character.
In newspapers, you mean?
Not in newspapers, but in book form, but by a very famous cartoonist. And that was the first time people actually saw this kind of humor come out of Germany. And people sort of people shrug off cartoons. You know, it's just a cartoon. And then it's sort of, it's not highbrow. And then that sort of, but that opened a door that sort of moved the goalposts. And I did a film on the same subject, a documentary in which I used actors to reenact the jokes, where Hitler actually is played by an actor and is grotesque. But that was sort of the first film, German film, where you would have this kind of Charlie Chaplin kind of caricature played by an actor.
Well, that's certainly part of the danger, I would imagine, is that the feeling that the German people might be trying to minimize or dismiss the history both then and maybe now in trying to deal with the humor. But it's probably broader than that.
Well, I think humor is a fantastic tool to look into people's minds, because people let down their guard and you kind of see what they care about, what they think about, what they're frustrated at. And, you know, for instance, that people knew about the camps after the war. You know, everyone said, look, we didn't know what was taking place. We didn't know about the camps. But there are jokes, numerous ones about the camps. I mean, for instance, two men meet in the street, and one says to the other, hey, well, goodness me, I'm glad to see you. I thought you were in a camp. I said, well, I was let out. It's amazing. Okay, well, how was it? And the other man says, well, it was great. I loved it. In the morning, I'd get up and, you know, they'd serve me coffee. And then we did a bit of sports, and then there was a big lunch, and afterwards we watched movies. And the other man says, well, that's really amazing. You know, the other day I met Meyer, and he told me a completely different story. The other one says, well, yeah, but he's been sent back in, hasn't he? So, I mean, that's a very grim and bleak joke, but these kind of jokes were circulating.
So what date would that have been? What time period would something, a joke like that, would have come out of?
It's difficult to date, but I would assume that it's pretty early on. Dachau opened pretty much directly after they took over power in 1933, and Dachau was kind of a synonym for concentration camps in the populace.
So in the research, you're also determining and coming to the conclusion that it was widely known, or at least known by a lot of the Germans, that they existed, even if they had said differently.
Absolutely. And they did say differently. I mean, they did, after the war, a whole generation claimed they didn't know anything, in spite of the fact that some of these camps are just right outside of the cities. You could see the chimneys. I mean, and these jokes disprove this what they were saying.
We started with Springtime for Hitler from Mel Brooks, the producers. Mel Brooks has said on more than one occasion, since he's mined this area many, many times, that he likes to make fun of Hitler because, in a way, it takes away his power, either historically or even in his own mind. Is that what this is about, too, for some of the anti-Hitler jokes?
I got very disillusioned about that. I actually, now that I've gone through the empirical research of looking at the humor, I can say, at least for the Germans, it's not true. It didn't take away any of the power. You must see, I come from Berlin. The Red Army, had to fight house by house to, you know, I mean, the Germans were literally fighting to the last bullet. Yet these were the same people who were telling jokes against Hitler all the time. So it didn't take away any of Hitler's power. So I think the subversiveness of humor is much exaggerated. And I became very disillusioned about that. Sadly, I wish he were right, but I don't think he is, actually.
Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate today. My guest is Rudolf Herzog. His book is called Dead Funny: Humor in Hitler's Germany. How was Berlin different? We often think New York is a little bit different and an island in the United States in a certain way. Is Berlin the same way? Did it have a different sense of humor than the rest of Germany?
Well, it was very lively between the wars. There were a lot of great Jewish comedians like Kurt Geron and others who really shaped it in that time. Well, with the Nazi period, obviously these people had to go into exile, and those who didn't, like Kurt Geron, who I just mentioned, ended up in Theresienstadt and later in Auschwitz. But that, of course, made it very special. I think that's what I would have to say to that.
Werner Fink, You write about him. Tell me who he is.
Well, Fink was a very clever comedian who was quite outspoken. He did political satire kind of thing, and he used it to jab at Hitler. I mean, there were numerous things he did, but you know, he had to be very careful, of course, you know, because he was being watched very carefully. And for instance, he had someone come in on stage with a portrait of Hitler, but it was turned with the face away from the audience, but everyone kind of guessed that it was. And the guy stumbles and he said, "Oh, don't topple him, don't topple him, don't topple that, don't topple that." So it was kind of this kind of hairline, this kind of walking on a razor's edge. And at some point, the regime in 1935 lost patience with him, and they actually put him in a camp for some time, and he was luckily able to get out. But even that he turned into a joke. I mean, he did a little show for the other inmates of the camp, and one of the punchlines was like, we were always scared of the camps. You know, like, we don't have to be scared anymore. We're inside now. So one of, you know, these kind of things. And then he came back, but very briefly, and then decided it would be better to volunteer for the army to save his own life, just to go to the Eastern Front. And he luckily survived the war.
At some point, he was put on trial and even turned that into a show.
Yes, he turned that into a show because he was asked what he was performing on stage. So he did all these sketches and all the things he would do. And there was the audience there was just cracking up with laughter. And of course, he was clever enough to actually remove any kind of politically problematic pieces from the sketches. But people obviously would second guess, you know.
And he got out, though. He eventually was released, yes?
Yes, yeah. He was released. But I think later on, when the war turned sour and the regime was cracking down on people who were not boosting morale, but doing the opposite, he wouldn't have gotten off lightly. For instance, there's a case of a widow of someone who had died in Stalingrad who was very bitter about the regime. And at her workplace, she told a joke about Hitler and Goering on the radio tower in Berlin. And Hitler looks at the city and says, "Wow, this is just this fantastic. You know, the Berliners, I always really liked them. They always voted for me. You know what? I'd really like to do them a favor." And Goering says, "Well, why don't you just jump?" But yeah, it's a great joke, actually. But the sad thing is that she was reported, and she had been outspoken against the regime, and she was executed. So
the woman who told the joke,
that's correct.
She was put to death. The Nazi salute was a good source for satire as well. Who took advantage of that?
Lots of people, because lots of people felt uncomfortable with it. It was just ridiculous. You know, if you look at it, it's pretty ridiculous. So there were lots of jokes, like, for instance, Hitler goes to visit a lunatic asylum, and the lunatics line up, do the salute. But at the end of the line, there's a man not saluting. He says, what are you doing? Why aren't you saluting? And the man says, "Well, I'm the orderly. I'm not one of the madmen." So these kind of things. But people felt very uncomfortable with this. A lot of people felt uncomfortable with it.
You tell a little bit about a German officer by the name of Ernst Röhm. How does he play out in your book?
Yeah, Röhm was the head of the SA, so of the stormtroopers. And he was killed in the Night of the Long Knives by Hitler. Well, not Hitler himself, but Hitler's henchmen, because the SA had become quite strong, and they wanted to get rid of him. And this was the first big display of kind of cannibalistic murder by the regime very early on. And it shocked a lot of people. And there were lots of jokes about Röhm afterwards. But most of them are about his homosexuality, you know, because he was homosexual. And that was rumored about. And they said, "Well, now he's up in heaven and he's got, you know, the angels have the fig leaf on the bum instead of the front, you know." So these kind of jokes. But some of the humor you see is they're like empty shells that can actually adapt to various content. Like this is just a standard kind of anti-gay joke, which can pop up anywhere. But it gets more interesting when you look at jokes that are directed at specific things, like the Reichstag fire, you know, because that's such a singular event. And people thought that the Nazis had set fire to the Reichstag themselves to be able to crack down on their opponents afterwards. And Goering was a very prominent figure in this. So afterwards, they, for instance, they said, well, you know, his assistant comes to Goering and says, Herr Reichsmarschall, the Reichstag's on fire. And Goering checks his watch and says, what, already? So it's not the world's greatest joke, but again, interesting that people would think this.
It's interesting that you've documented them. I have to say, you know, not all of them are laugh out loud, of course. And I think the subject may actually make people feel a little uncomfortable, but it's very interesting that you've documented it. Outside of Germany, of course, humor was employed to denigrate Hitler. I did the math because it surprised me when I realized that Charlie Chaplin's The Great Dictator was made in 1940. This is 5 years before Hitler was gone. He was still around at that time. That must have been, I assume, I don't know if it ever played in Germany, but it just seems unusual to me that I thought he was long gone by the time Chaplin had poked fun at him.
No. It was very visionary. I mean, Chaplin realized, and he was the right opponent, you know. As to the question when it came out in Germany, much later. And I read a review, probably from the 50s or something, where the reviewer, the German reviewer, says, well, this is a fantastic film. Chaplin is fabulous. But we're not ready for this. So that was really amazing.
And also Ernst Lubitsch's To Be or Not to Be. Also, Hitler was still around.
Yes, he was still around. The problem was that Lubitsch's film is 2 years later. It came out 2 years later when America had already joined the war. And that didn't go down well. People thought it was just not a right thing to do. In my opinion, just bad timing, because the film is, you know, really great. It deserves to be a classic. But, you know, the Americans weren't kind of ready, you know, when there was so much bloodletting going on, bloodshedding, to watch a comedy about Hitler.
Was there any part of this book that was uncomfortable for you, that you were balancing some of these horrors with humor?
Well, uncomfortable, the uncomfortable parts are obviously all the anti-Semitic things, because I wanted to look at pro-Nazi humor as well. You can't blink. You have to kind of look at what they did there too. And I mean, I felt uncomfortable with some of that. But again, if you want to have a proper 360-degree view of what was going on, then you have to look at, not shy away from these things.
And finally, your father, Werner Herzog, is known for humor in some of his movies. Is that a part of your life, at looking at this kind of humor rubbed off from your dad?
Well, I think everyone has some sense of humor. I can't tell if my humor is similar to my father's. That would be someone else to judge. But I really like that there's humor in his films. And I'm glad you pointed out, because not everyone sees that. But I think you're right.
I've been speaking with Rudolf Herzog about his book, Dead Funny, Humor in Nazi Germany. It's published by Melville House. Thank you much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Wanna crush Poland? And I'm gonna take over France. Down, Baba do the this. I'm gonna take over Poland. And then I'm gonna crush France.